Well, good morning. This is the Lou Rockwell Show, and what an honor it is to have as our guest today, Mr. Jesse Ventura. I'll mention Jesse's Twitter handle, at GovJVentura, and I want to talk a little bit before we bring on Jesse about his online show, Off the Grid. Now in his second season, Off the Grid presents USA's favorite everyman, Jesse Ventura, and he's always at his best. Not one to shy away from controversy, as we well know. The former governor of Minnesota, professional wrestler, actor, and Navy SEAL offers his electrifying insights into the nation's most pressing problems. No suits, no censors, no red tape. Just Jesse Ventura as we like him, bold, brazen, and bare-knuckled. Some of his guests have included Judge Andrew Napolitano, Ralph Nader, William Shatner, Roger Stone, Alex Jones, and Ron Paul, and many others. And of course, we're going to list Jesse's Twitter handle, his books, his URL for his show, but I'll mention it right now. It's www.ora.tv/offthegrid. And by the way, new episodes there 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So Jesse, your show I know is very successful. I'm sure you love doing it, and your audience sure loves it. Why don't you talk to us about some of the issues that are bugging you these days?
Hillary Clinton's emails, you know, they don't really even bother me that much. I'm really not that concerned. I think there's far more pressing problems. And then I just learned today that Jeb Bush was doing the same thing when he was governor of Florida, that he was sending classified things on a private email. And he's been one of the biggest criticizers of Hillary. And like I usually state, hypocrisy at its best when you got the Democrats dealing with the Republicans. They're all a bunch of hypocrites. I mean, Hillary's emails don't mean that much to me. I think there's far more pressing problems than a political issue trying to dethrone who very likely will be the Democratic nomination for president. Clearly, I'll tell you where I feel, Lou. I wish they'd do the same type of investigation of the torture we did.
You're not allowed to bring that up, of course.
Of course not. But why not? I mean, because it's a black eye the United States is going to have to live with, and we're really not that good at dealing with black eyes. We like to put makeup on.
Jesse, it seems to me that the Hillary emails are just another in a long line of distractions to try to distract people from the actual issues that count, whether it's all the wars or the economy, our diminishing civil liberties, the surveillance state. They'd like us to concentrate on this non-problem.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lou. They create these nothing issues, and then all the mainstream media jumps on board, and it's the story for the next 2 to 3 weeks. You know what it reminds me of, Lou? Do you remember when the bimbo Anna Nicole Smith died?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, my God, you would have. I mean, she got more coverage than John F. Kennedy when he was assassinated. You know, and I mean, they had mobiles at the hotel where they found her. Who cares? You know, she's a blonde bimbo. She's a gold digger. She never did nothing really but be a model. And yet her name today rises up occasionally. That's your mainstream media today. They are no longer Walter Cronkite giving us information. They're in the entertainment world. And people need to wake up to that fact that mainstream media today is out to entertain you, not inform you.
And Jesse, as you pointed out, nobody's interested in this, the start of the Iraq war, the start of the Afghan war, the people who want to start a war against Iran. War. Nobody seems interested in that. They're just interested in this sort of a distraction.
Let me tell you something, Lou, and we'll get it out right here. I just saw a poll where 60% of the American people think we should go get ISIS over there, right? Well, my challenge to them is, okay, fine, then enlist your sons and daughters and send them over there to fight. Because if you're going to support another war in the Middle East, it's time that the people that are supporting it have the dog in the fight. I'm sick of this, where they send the innocent, the poor people, and all the people, the regular. I've already proposed that if I became president, one of the things I would strive for to have passed is that if there was a vote to go to war, senator, congressman, or president, whoever votes to go to war has to pre-designate a family member who at that point must begin military service. Because the problem with all these wars today that we're fighting is this. Most people are not feeling any pain from them. When you go to war, the entire country should feel pain. Look at World War II. there the country felt pain. There was rationing. You couldn't get everything. You had to work for the common good. You had women in mass quantities replacing all the men that went off to war. You had pain of a nation. All these wars since World War II, our country suffered no pain. And that's why it's easy to fight war. And it's easy for 60% of the nation to sit back and say, oh, yeah, let's go over there and fight, when they don't have a dog in that fight.
Jesse, my own view is that the congressmen and senators who vote for a war ought to themselves enlist. And even if they're old, they can peel potatoes or clean a latrine or whatever. Send them over there.
Well, you know, I would settle for just a family member because technically they have a job to do. They're here. They run our government. I would just make sure it was a niece, a nephew, a son, or a daughter, because most of them are probably a little bit too old. It reminds me of my mom. My mom was a World War II veteran. She was a nurse in North Africa in World War II. And I remember she was in her 60s, I think, when she got a letter from the military asking her if she wanted to further her career and be a nurse in the military. So she went along with it and she called them back and they gave her the whole cell job. And then in the end, she kind of laughed and said, well, I'm not sure about this. Do you take World War II veterans? The guy on the other end almost swallowed the phone. He goes, you're a World War II veteran? She goes, oh, yeah. She said, I served in North Africa. And she said, I was just interested in knowing if you take back 60-some-year-old World War II veterans.
Very funny. How interested are people actually in what's going on with these wars? They seem so susceptible to the propaganda. I mean, there are those who think that ISIS was created at least in part by some of the Western intelligence agencies in order to exactly bring about what's happened so that everybody becomes war supporting again. And they want to go get these people who I guess we're supposed to think are going to take Cleveland next week.
Lou, I don't think that's beyond belief. I think we have a policy that creates terrorism right now. Our whole involvement over in the Middle East creates terrorism. Our invasion of Iraq created terrorism. Do you think ISIS would be around if Saddam were still in charge?
No.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So I really believe if you read Jeremy Scahill's book, Dirty Wars, he won't come out and say it. But when you read the book and look at our policies are designed to create more terrorists, not less, because we need to be at perennial war. Eisenhower warned us of it back in the 50s, the military-industrial complex, when he said never before has America faced what they're going to face with this military-industrial complex. It'll be everywhere. And certainly Ike was right. We got to feed the military-industrial complex war machine. I've been alive since 1951, and there isn't one war that's been fought since I've been alive, and we've been at war. If you count the war on drugs, which that is also a war, thousands are dying because of it. We've been at war literally my whole life. And I say enough is enough. My position is let's get out of the Middle East. Let's close down our embassies and let's bring everybody home. Here's my argument, Lou, and I think you'll find this interesting. Back in 1492, when Columbus discovered the United States for the Anglo-Saxon European world, what was his mission? His mission was to find an alternative route to India, right, avoiding the Middle East. So if in 1492, Columbus was trying to avoid the Middle East, nothing has changed in the Middle East in those last 600-700 years. It's still the same. And Columbus was willing to defy science because at that point they said the world was flat. He would have rather sailed off the flat earth than to have gone through the Middle East. Now, shouldn't we learn something from that?
And yet, Jesse, when Prime Minister Netanyahu came over here, the reaction of the Congress and the Senate, which I thought was highly inappropriate, didn't seem like they're going to be interested in less involvement in the Middle East.
Well, I'll tell you what. A lot of people, I think this stems, and I hate to say it, but you got a lot of religious zealots out there who want to believe that the end of the world is at hand and that when that happens, it'll be the Middle East where it takes place. And a lot of these people actually, I think, want it to happen so it justifies their belief in religion. Because if it does happen and religion predicted it, they can all look at us wherever we'll all be dead and say, see, we were right. Unfortunately, I'm not one of those people. I'm not religious. So therefore, I don't buy into that program.
Well, and there are plenty of us who are religious who don't buy into it either, because the idea that we're supposed to promote the end of the world, which is what some of these people do believe, is not, that's not a good idea from anybody's standpoint, it seems to me, except the nuts.
Oh, well, I would hope so.
Well, you know, as we think about the fact that the Republicans are pushing for Obama to have an endless power to fight ISIS, and the American people seem to be for it. Is this what we're going to get? Are we going to get a new gigantic war against, 25,000 troops armed with rifles and American pickup trucks? And then apparently all their weapons came from America. I'm sure that's just a mere coincidence.
Well, you know, Lou, I always love the fact that they're always trying to take away our Second Amendment here and disarm us and take away our right to bear arms. And I've always said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll listen to them when they practice the same thing, meaning our government. We need to remember our government is the biggest arms dealer in the world. We create all the armaments that all these people are using other than the AK-47, and we're probably making that now too, a knockoff. But anyway, we create all these armaments. It's big business. It's making money, and therefore they have to use them to kill each other. And so getting back to the Second Amendment, I'll disarm and stop buying a gun when I see my own government stop selling weapons throughout the world. When we cease to be the major arms dealer of the world, then I would consider maybe a little bit the Second Amendment a little more. But not until they got to do it first before I even consider it.
And Jesse, certainly the Obama administration seems to, and they're hardly the first ones against the Second Amendment, but they seem to have pioneered this, all these vast ammunition purchases by every federal agency in order to raise prices for the rest of us in order to make ammunition less available. And of course, they tried to do it just recently with AR-15 ammo, although I guess they failed. I guess this is the backlash was such that they had to give that up. And if that's the case, it maybe shows us the way to other things as well.
Well, you know, it's funny because I think our government, the first thing they should do, Lou, is they should go back and repeal the Traitor Act. I think it's called the Patriot Act. I call it the Act of Treason.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If they would repeal that, it would be a step in the right direction because that was something that should have never passed in the first place. It violates the Constitution. It violates the Bill of Rights. And those are the fabric of our land. And it troubles me, too, Lou, today when I see the statistics out there that the United States now has more prisoners than any other country in the world, including Red China. We have more. We're supposed to be home of the brave, land of the free. And we have more people in jail than any other country in the world. And the fact that I don't know if you're aware of this, but Gallup did a poll a couple months ago. And they polled, I think, 3,000 people or something internationally. And one of the questions was, if you go to war, who do you think it would most likely be against? And it was astounding. 23%, nearly one out of four, said the United States of America. Second place was Pakistan at 8%. Third place was China at 6%. Now, as a veteran, I hang my head in shame that one out of four international people would view the United States as quite possibly the biggest aggressor of who they would have to go to war against. There used to be a time they used to look up and try to emulate us. Now they fear us. Is that what we really want? We want to be the superpower that's feared. I would think we would want to be the superpower who is humble and respected.
Well, there was an ancient Roman saying that we don't care if they love us so long as they fear us. That was sort of the unofficial motto of the Roman Empire. Apparently, is this the motto of the American Empire, too?
Well, America's, if you look at the Roman Empire, we're heading right down the same road. I mean, it looks like a blueprint. What Rome did is exactly what the United States is doing. But I guess since we're the United States, that can't happen to us, what happened to Rome.
You know, Jesse, speaking about the prisons, Chris Hedges had an article recently talking about how many suicides there are in prison. And it's his view that they actually want to stimulate suicide. And the conditions are so horrific. It's bad enough to be put in a cage, taken away from your family and put in a cage and be under the control of prison guards. That's bad enough. But in terms of solitary confinement and all other kinds of other prison punishments, Chris thinks that They actually want people to commit suicide, and it is happening whether they want it or not.
I wouldn't doubt it, because I'll tell you what else is hugely high, like tenfold higher than anywhere else, is rape in prison. I just saw statistics on that from was put in front of me not a week or so ago, and I was astounded by it. And it's like it's condoned. It's like the general public has an attitude, well, they're prisoners, so if rape takes place, either female or male, oh, well, they're in prison, so that's what you come to expect. Well, the bottom line, it's still called the Department of Corrections. That means you're supposed to simply go there and be corrected. It's supposed to, our prisons are supposed to send you away a better person than when you arrived. I think the opposite happens. I think people that go to prison generally come out worse than they were before they went, and then they're put back in society again. And I'm just very fearful of, you know, they've privatized prisons to such an extent now that prisons are now a for-profit business. And that's extremely dangerous, because that means they have to be so full in which to make a profit, which means you and I, our liberties at risk then, that we could end up in prison for some reason.
And Jesse, in fact, whenever there's a move to legalize marijuana, legalize medical marijuana, the big lobbying groups against that in the states are the prison guard unions and the prison companies. They're the ones who don't want, they want the prisoners. And of course, these are most of these people have never committed anything that we would consider a crime, and yet they're put in a cage and their lives destroyed, perhaps to be raped, perhaps to commit suicide, certainly and to come out a humiliated and a destroyed person. But again, it's the interest, it's the prison guard unions and the prison companies who want everybody in prison.
Well, Lou, here's an interesting thing. A neighbor of mine down here off the grid lives in Washington, the state, and he's already told me through the legalization of marijuana in Washington, their judicial budget has already dropped 15%. 15%
wow.
In 1 year. They're paying less as taxpayers to the judicial part because they're not prosecuting marijuana anymore. People fail to realize, all these people out there fail to realize, if you take some kid or some adult that smokes a joint and you prosecute them, that costs a lot of money. Court is not cheap. Public defenders and the prosecution is not cheap. It costs a huge amount of money. And Washington's already eliminated, and this is just the beginning, 15% of their judicial budget. They're down simply because they're not prosecuting marijuana anymore. And I had Tommy Chong on the show, and Tommy made an interesting point to me. He said that marijuana should not be classified either medicinal or recreational. He said the marijuana plant itself is a complete medical plant, and people that use it for the euphoric, the THC, the one, the mind one, they're using it as a medicine for their mind. And if it beats having to take pills from the doctor to feel euphoric, what's wrong with that? And what's wrong with feeling euphoric? Isn't that a good feeling? You're usually smiling. You're usually happy. But apparently feeling euphoric should be against the law.
Unless it's being produced by some big pharmaceutical company. Then,
exactly.
Of course, then
you
it's okay to have
be
it.
As euphoric as you want to be, as long as you're popping Oxycontin like Rush Limbaugh was.
And of course, unlike marijuana, which has never killed anybody, took away Limbaugh's hearing, these are dangerous drugs. And of course, there are tremendous number of deaths from opiates, from the prescribed opiates.
Oh, well, look at today. If we legalized drugs, Philip Seymour Hoffman would be alive. The great actor, the Academy Award winning actor. Obviously, he used heroin. Well, that's not a good thing to do, but what the hell? So did Keith Richards. So did plenty of people. But obviously, it didn't affect Philip. He won the Academy Award. So if he's able to do it and still be a heroin addict, my point being is, if it were legal, he would have gotten clean heroin. He'd be alive today instead of buying it under the table from a dealer where you don't know what you're getting, or a drug pusher. Oh, and he ends up a fatality because of it.
No, and until 1914, every drug was available to every American who wanted to use it. There was no crazy drug plague. There was no people hitting other people over the head to get their money to buy drugs. it was not a drug-crazed country. It was the suppression of drugs, the prohibition of drugs, just as with the prohibition of alcohol, that caused increased use. And we should also remember that heroin was produced by a drug company as a pain reliever till it was outlawed by the federal government. So if somebody chooses to use it, why isn't that just their business?
Yeah, and LSD was created by our government in the MKUltra program when the CIA was giving it to unbeknownst people because they thought LSD would be a good thing to give a prisoner because they might get information out of them. So they used a bunch of human guinea pigs, the MKUltra program, and our government created LSD. Here's what I love, though, and here's a great argument I use, Lou, is this. Going back to Anna Nicole Smith, if we may, for a moment. Now, the Beatles all admitted that when they wrote Sgt. Pepper, they had all taken LSD. They admitted it. Now, arguably, Sgt. Pepper is probably one of the greatest rock albums ever. You know, it stands up there with, you know, all of the great albums. And they all took LSD. Anna Nicole Smith took 6 medical prescribed drugs, and she was incapable of even dialing 911. And yet all her drugs were legal, and LSD's illegal, and the Beatles created Sgt. Pepper, and she couldn't dial 911. Which drug's worse?
No, and one of the great English language poets in history, Percy Shelley, took opium before writing some of his greatest poems. So I think we don't know very much at all about these drugs, and certainly we just can't believe what the government tells us.
Oh, absolutely not, because and the other thing, like you brought up earlier, like my mother said to me, and my mother lived through the prohibition of alcohol, and before she passed, she told me, and she had all her faculties, she said, you know, this war on drugs, she said, it's identical to the prohibition of alcohol. All you're doing is making criminals rich and powerful.
No, that's right. And you also, another aspect of it, as Mark Thornton of the Mises Institute always points out, is things are made much more concentrated. So that, for example, under prohibition, beer pretty much disappeared. Wine pretty much disappeared. It was just as illegal to distribute beer, but much more profitable to distribute 200 proof vodka. So that's what got distributed. And the same thing has happened with under the legalization of marijuana, for example. It's much more powerful today than it used to be. And this may be true of the other drugs as well. So if we had a private market and customers in control, we'd have a very different, much more diverse form of these substances.
Lou, I got to differ with you on that, and I'll do it, and I'll say it this way: I think that I got way more higher on marijuana when I was young than I did today.
Well, maybe in Mexico, Jesse, I mean, it's much better.
No. I'm just saying back when I first tried marijuana way back when you were a teenager. And,
yes.
I grew up in the 60s.
Yeah, me
you
too.
You know, and anybody that tells you they didn't smoke pot in the 60s either didn't grow up in the 60s or they're lying.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just remember back then, holy smokes, marijuana was really something. And, you know, in later in life today, they claim that it's stronger. But my memory had it more powerful. Maybe it's just because it was new when I was young. Is that the answer, Lou?
Well, it may be the answer. And also, even then, there were stronger versions. And even when I was a kid, stronger versions and weaker versions. But I think overall today, as an average, they're stronger.
Well, I'll tell you what the real positive thing is today, Lou. They've gotten them now. It's seedless.
Hey.
No, they've gotten out. Where all the good pot you buy, you don't see a seed. You know, where I remember in the old days in the 60s, hell, half the bag could end up seeds.
Well, that's true, of course. So, Jesse, it seems like, of course, there's so many horrible things going on. Things are getting so much worse, and whether it's the wars or many different other kinds of areas. But it does seem like there is progress on the marijuana front.
Well, marijuana has kind of taken off, and I hoped it would, like gay marriage did. You know, they tried to ban gay marriage, and all of a sudden it backfired on them. There were a lot of gay people, and there were a lot of hetero people that didn't have a problem with gay people getting married, you know, and it backfired. And now just about every state has legalized gay marriage. I believe the federal government in April, the Supreme Court's going to rule on it. They better uphold it. If they don't uphold gay marriage, then I know that our country's in big trouble.
You know, Jesse, I'm looking at two of my favorite of your books right now. When They Killed Our President, about the assassination of JFK, and 63 Documents the Government doesn't want You to Read. Are you working on another book right now?
I am, and I kind of am. I don't know how you say this. I maybe am. There's one topic that I kind of want to do, and then I'm not fully committed to it yet. And I believe when you write a book like that, you have to be committed to the topic. So until I become fully committed to the topic, I've got no more plans, although we're doing an expanded version now of American Conspiracies, Lies, Lies, and More Lies, the government tells you.
Magnificent.
That's going to be expanded. They're doing a new printout where we're going to cover the POW issue, how we've left guys overseas. We've left people in Iraq, on the 91 war, Vietnam. And I want to expose to the public this lie that they perpetrate on all military people, having been one myself. They lie to you when they tell you that they will do anything if you get captured to recover you. That's not true. If you become a political liability, forget it. You're gone, and they will never do one thing to get you back to your country. And I think people that join the military need to be clear on that, to know that if they become a political liability, politics will take precedence over whatever rules or whatever standards or whatever you want to honor, if you want to call it that. And then we're going to also update 9/11. Because these 28 redacted pages that they won't let us see and all that stuff, well, we're doing our damnedest to find out what's in them. And so we're going to update 9/11. We're going to do, and then I think we may be doing, I can't remember, I got to talk to Russell again, but there'll be four or five new chapters to American Conspiracy.
Well, it's terrific. Of course, rather than one book, you may need an actual Encyclopedia Britannica to cover all the lies the government tells us. But
Well, we just try to stick glued to the main ones, the big ones. If we start going to the little lies, you're right. I'd need the Encyclopedia Britannica in all its volumes, or I might need all the laws of the state of Minnesota. I walked one time when I first won governor into the Secretary of State's law office, and there was a whole wall covered with books. I was the newly elected governor. I mean, there was like equivalent to five Encyclopedia Britannicas on the wall or more. And I turned to the young lady there and I said, "What are all these?" And the lady goes, the young girl goes, "Oh, those are all the laws of the state of Minnesota." And I stopped and I looked at her and I looked back at the, and I said, "You mean to tell me they tell us ignorance of the law is no excuse? I'm supposed to know every law in every one of these books? Are you kidding me?" So I went back. You'll love this story, Lou. I went back to my staff. I said, "Look, here's what I want to do." I said, "How do I make it where every 3 years the legislature can't pass a new law? They can only come in and repeal old, outdated ones so that we can lower the size of these books." And about 10 minutes later, my staff came back to me and said, "Well, Governor, we got a problem with what you want to do." I said, "What's the problem?" He said, "Well, to do what you want to do, we got to change the state constitution." I said, "Never mind, because, you know, that's a 10 or 12 year process you're talking about." And there was no way I was going to get elected 12 years. I never wanted to serve that long. I only generally do one term and then I move on.
And Jesse, when you became governor, didn't you meet some interesting intelligence people stationed right in your office building?
Yeah, well, not in my office building, but within Minnesota government. Yeah, I came out in my one book, Don't Start the Revolution Without Me. I felt the people needed to know because it's their tax dollars. Now, I didn't say who it was because I could get in trouble and go to jail for that because you're outing an agent, you know, to the public. But I did want the people to know that the CIA was embedded in state government, at least Minnesota state government. Now, I only assume they're embedded in all government because I can't think Minnesota's the exception unless it was me.
No, no,
you know,
of course
that because I was an independent, the CIA felt they needed to keep me under tabs because Angus King was also the governor of Maine at that time. And, you know, I'm sure that Maine probably had their own CIA representative, too. And the thing that upset me about it and why people needed to know it was because the CIA's mission statement says they're not to be operational inside the United States.
Yes.
That's the FBI's job. And yet the CIA violates their own mission statement probably thousands of tens of thousands of times. Who knows? And yet they're not supposed to operate inside the U.S., but they're embedded in Minnesota state government.
Jesse, have you thought of getting back into politics?
I thought about it. You know, 2016 would be the year to run for president because the last election, I mean, they're opening the door for me. I mean, look at the last election. What was it, 36% voter turnout?
Yes.
Okay, that means potentially 64% are out there waiting for me. That's a majority. And you know I'm going to steal some from the other 36. So all I'd have to do is motivate enough of those 64%. And I already know how I'd do it, Lou. I would campaign on one basic issue, and I believe I could win on it. You want to hear it?
Yes, please.
Here's what I would do. I would challenge the American people, if I did it, I would challenge the American people to make history with me and to elect the first governor since George Washington, the father of our country, who does not belong to a political party. We've only had one. George Washington is our only president who has never belonged to a political party. I think in light of how they hate Congress today and all of that, I believe you could win. You could challenge people and win on that issue alone. Because when I won the governor of Minnesota, they predicted the final polling, I was at 27%. They predicted a 50% voter turnout because it was a non-presidential. It ended up 60. And I went from 27 to 37%. Those extra 10% is what the pundits didn't count on. It's what put me over the top and how I beat the Democrats and Republicans.
And of course, the good guys among the founding fathers were concerned about faction, which was political parties. They were concerned about how did you prevent this from taking place? And of course, they weren't successful in preventing it from taking place.
Oh, very much. John Adams was quoted as saying it would be the downfall of the United States when political parties take over the government.
Well, political parties took over the government. We've seen the downfall, at least, of a free America. That's for sure.
Well, they warned us. You know, those guys that wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, they were not a group of dummies. You know, those are well thought out documents. And they did a remarkable job with them. And they're the fabric of our nation. And we need to get back to them again. We need to start forcing government to abide by its own rules.
Jesse, if you ran, would you run as an independent?
I would try to, but I'd need ballot access. So what I'd probably have to do, I'd probably have to go to the Libertarian Convention in June next year and explain to them, look, I want your nomination. I want your ballot access, but please allow me to win. Don't make me join a party. Because that's what I'm going to win on. And I think the libertarians would go for it because I've already passed their exam and all that stuff. You know, you got to have the 70% right or whatever. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I remember I took that thing once and I passed with flying colors. And but I would just say, look, what I need, I don't want to be labeled the libertarian candidate. You can put me down. I'll use that as the stepping stone to ballot access. But I need to have no political, and I think the libertarians are not there to dictate to me. I can't see them telling me, well, look, you got to do this, you got to do that, the way the Republicans and the Democrats are. And they need to understand, too, that when I run for these offices, I don't run just to make a statement. I run to win because I've done it twice now, and I like having an unbeaten record.
Well, Jesse Ventura, it's been great to talk to you. People have heard you. We'll understand why you've been such a significant figure, not only in American politics, but as a public intellectual in all the books you've written, the speeches you've given, how you've stirred people on your show.
Lou,
yes, sir.
Not bad for a wrestler, huh?
No.
No. I always laugh over that, how people stereotype wrestlers. And they don't realize today that the majority of wrestlers are all college graduates.
Well, the only two wrestlers that I know personally are you and Glenn Jacobs. You're both very smart guys.
Well, and that's the point. You know, in order to pull off wrestling, you have to be a pretty intelligent person. You know, you're doing ballet with violence out there. And, you know, but I have to laugh when people think that just because you're a wrestler that somehow you're shallow. Well, the thing that wrestling allowed me to do, especially in the latter years, I flew all the time. When I'd fly, I'd read books. And amazingly, I'd like to tell people out there, Lou, start reading books again. They really will educate you. There's nothing wrong with reading books instead of watching TV and the internet. Try reading a book occasionally.
Well, that's for sure, and that's certainly been a trope of the Lou Rockwell Show. Read. That's the way you educate yourself. It's the way you prevent yourself from being fooled by the government and by the establishment.
Yep, absolutely. And read a lot, because the more you read, the smarter you get, believe it or not. I live down here off the grid. I'll read 17, 18 books a winter. Now, Lou, I got to admit, that's more than I read in my whole education when I went, because I only went to high school. I read more books in one winter than I read in the 13 years that I went to public school, I think.
Jesse Ventura, keep reading, keep speaking out, keep writing, keep helping lead this country. I want to tell everybody, watch Jesse's show. Look at www.aura.tv/off-the-grid. We'll have that link, of course, on this podcast, as well as Jesse's Twitter handle at GovJVentura, and as well as his books. Jesse, thanks a million for coming on, and it's been an honor to have you.
Lou, thank you very much, and let me just say this to you. If I do decide to make that step in 2016, I'd certainly like you on board with me.
Well, let's talk about it.
Okay, we'll do it if we get close enough, but I'll remind you, though, Lou, don't hold your breath.
Okay.
Okay, great talking to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jesse. Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today. Take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.